hear the words of Jesus. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Father, in a world where we feel in our own spirits and in we sense in the pulse around us, the people we care most about, just this forever sense of being behind on our to-do list, this low-grade fatigue, this nonstop anxiety that seems to be the new norm, may we hear your invitation this morning. And may we reorient all that we are to your words. We pray in the name of Jesus. Amen. All right, have a seat. Lots of people have offered suggestions for why this sense of restlessness, this sense of anxiety that seems to be all around us. Some people point to information overload. Right, we've all heard the stats of all the information that we're getting, the 24-hour news cycle, this constant sense of if we're not connected, we're falling behind because we're constantly being inundated with information. And so much of the news, so much of that information now is alarmist and increasingly angry and meant to try to drive up fear in ourselves. So we have that. Other people point to, even though we're connected, this lack of community, this isolation that so many of us, for sure in this country, but really in pockets around the world, there's a historic level and spike in loneliness. It's a new epidemic that's sweeping the world, this loneliness, and across all age groups, whether it's our young people all the way up to our seniors and our elderly, loneliness is at high, all-time historic highs. But other people point to just this intolerance of pain that we have, this intolerance of suffering, this sense that everything should be smooth all the time. So we have this intolerance for hard emotions. And I know I sense this in myself. Like, I expect things to just go smoothly. You can plug into your GPS when you're going to arrive to the minute. Like, we'll be there in 6 hours and 22 minutes. And if something comes up that we're not expecting, there's a sense of what has happened. Because we have been sold this lie that life is supposed to be easy and comfortable and convenient. And so we pursue pleasure. We pursue leisure all the time, but then when life happens, because life is hard, when suffering comes up, when pain comes up, we go into this confused tailspin because we don't anticipate that coming. Whatever the reason, all of those things and probably many, many other things lead to this restlessness and leads to this sense of anxiety. John Mark Comer, in his book, Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, talks about hurry sickness. And I want you, if you would, I'm just going to run through these top 10 symptoms of hurry sickness, and I want you to self-diagnose. Okay, so as we go through it, just kind of keep track on your fingers. How many of these kind of ring true for you? They seem familiar to you. Irritability, hypersensitivity, restlessness, this inability to rest or relax, even when you try to slow down, even when you do take your deep breaths and you have a day off, you have this sense of restlessness. You can't rest. You can't relax in your spirits. Workaholism, or just non-stop activity. Emotional numbness. You don't have the capacity to feel or to feel another person's pain. Empathy is something that is a rare feeling for you. Out of order priorities. You feel disconnected from your true identity, your true calling. You're busy doing things, but it's not the things that matter most to you. Lack of care for your body. escapist behaviors, therapy shopping, binging, whether it's food or drink or Netflix, right? Endless scrolling. You just turn to scrolling or turn to gaming just to escape from reality. Slippage of spiritual disciplines. You're not spending time in the Word. You're not spending time in quiet with Him as much as you once did. So a slippage of those disciplines. And then the last one, isolation, feeling disconnected from God, from others, from even yourself. So how'd you do? Out of 10, how many fingers, how many hands did you have to use with this hurry sickness? John Mark Comer goes on to say, your life is the byproduct of your lifestyle. By life, I mean your experience of the human condition. And by lifestyle, I mean the rhythms and routines that make up your day-to-day existence. The way you organize your time, the way you spend your money. There's a saying in business literature that I love. Every system is perfectly designed to get the results it gets. So if the results you're getting are lousy, anxiety at a simmer, mild depression, high levels of stress, chronic emotional burnout, little to no sense of the presence of God, an inability to focus our mind on the things that make for life, etc., then the odds are very good that something about the system that is your life is off kilter. The way you've organized your morning or your evening, your routine, your schedule, your budget, your relationship to your phone, something is out of whack. So if you aren't experiencing the life that Jesus intends for us, if your life is not marked by the fruits of the Spirit and this peace that passes all understanding, if your life that you're experiencing isn't life that truly is life that Jesus invites us into, then your system is off kilter. But the good news is that Jesus offers us an invitation to a whole new way of being human, a whole new way of doing life, a way that results and rest, physical, emotional, psychological, holistic rest, or in the words of Jesus, rest for your soul. But even as I say that, that quiet voice, that Western secular voice that we all have now, that inner cynic that we can't help but hear, is whispering, it's a pipe dream. It's not real. It can't be true. Or at least it's not true. It's not true for me. Yeah, maybe that works for someone else, but not me. That rest is too good to be true. And the danger is we think that we know what Jesus is saying. We think we know what Jesus is inviting us to. But I wonder if we really do know. My wonderful sweet wife, Wendy, tricked me into doing a triathlon a few years ago. And I am not a runner. If someone's chasing me, I'll run. Or if you roll a ball out, I'll chase the ball all day. Just to run, just for the sake of running, that's just not me. It never has been me. But here I am. I'm at this triathlon. It's not one of the huge triathlons. It's a mini triathlon. But I'm running. I'm swimming. I'm biking. I did a tiny bit of training on the front end. I went for some runs. I practiced my breathing, you know, in a pool. I didn't train biking. I know how to ride a bike. So, you know, I show up for the triathlon. And I look around and I quickly realize I'm already kind of out of my league. I mean, there's spandex everywhere. And I'm thinking, yeah, this may not be my people. But here we go. We jump in. We get into the pool and we're doing all these back and forths in the pool. And after like one or two back and forths, I'm already flipped over. I'm doing like the otter swim, you know, on my back. I'm already realizing I'm in trouble. I get out. I do my run. I like stumble through it. I'm exhausted. I get on the bike and realize that you probably should train to be on a bike for that long. I finish the race, and as we're kind of you know, I finished like everyone else, so I have my little medal for finishing, and I'm starting to feel like maybe these are my people, you know? And I leave that day with part of me enjoying the life of having done a triathlon. There's a part of me that thinks, you know, maybe this could be for me. But I wanted the life without the lifestyle. Right? I wanted the thrill of the medal, but without getting up early and doing the training, doing the work. The life without the lifestyle. So Jesus is offering us an entire new lifestyle, a different way to be human. And it's interesting, his invitation is, come to me and I'll give you a yoke. I'll give you a tool made for work. And you can kind of think of this as the yoke joke, right? Because it's like saying, oh, you want rest? Okay, here's a post hole digger. Like good luck with the rest. Frederick Dale Bruner has this quote. He says, a yoke is a work instrument. Thus, when Jesus offers a yoke, he offers what we might think tired workers need least. They need a mattress or vacation, not a yoke. But Jesus realizes that the most restful gift that he can give us is a new way to carry life, a fresh way to bear responsibilities. Realism sees that life is a succession of burdens. We can't get away from them. Thus, instead of offering escape, Jesus offers equipment. The rest that he offers us isn't an absence of work, right? Work isn't the problem. Work isn't the enemy. Work comes in Genesis 1 before Genesis 2, before the fall. So work isn't the problem. Voltaire says that work saves a man from three great evils: boredom, vice, and need. So if you're having trouble with your kids, maybe give them more chores, right? Right? Work saves us from boredom, vice, and need. So work isn't the problem, but we need to work from rest and not work to rest. We need to work out of our rest instead of working just to get to the rest. So that 80s song, everybody's working for the weekend, gets it wrong. That's not the way of Jesus. And that's the gift of Sabbath that God gives his people, right? The Sabbath is how the Jewish people started their week. You start with rest. You start with inactivity, without being productive, and then the work flows out of that, or the way that Jewish people did their day, right? I mean, we know that the day begins at sundown, whereas we work all day to get to able to rest. The Jewish people see the day beginning with going into a coma, essentially, right? The day begins by laying down and being unconscious for 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. And that's how we then work the rest of the day out of that rest. Jesus offers us a new way to do life as we bear our responsibility. And yoke was a common metaphor for a teacher's whole body of instruction. So Jesus's yoke would have been the Sermon on the Mount. That's what he's offering. Right, to be a rabbi, to have this yoke that you pass on to your disciples, his is the Sermon on the Mount. I think what he has in mind is the animal yoke, which harnesses two animals together, usually a younger and an older one, to pull a cart or to pull a plow. And his invitation of come and learn from me implies that. That it's, hey, it's not, here's this single person yoke that a servant would sometimes use to spread out the weight on their shoulder to bear it on their own. But it's, come come learn from me. Come wear this yoke with me. I'm here right next to you, right? We're going to do this together, to come and learn from me. This learn from me could also be translated as learn of me, because Jesus is the instructor and he's the syllabus. He's the one teaching, but it's his life that we're learning from. He's the teacher in the content. And notice, so we're in Matthew 11, those last three verses, 28 through 30. Notice that rest is offered twice. It's offered in verse 28. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. This is rest that we get instantly when we come to Christ, because part of the burden is sin. Part of the burden is sin, and when we come to Jesus, he gives us this rest. He takes the sin off of our shoulders, and it happens when we come to Christ. Everything is lighter in water, and we step into the waters of baptism. The sin, that burden floats away, right? So there's a rest that is given to us, but then there's also this rest in verse 29 that we find, a rest that is found, a rest that comes as we increasingly learn, as we do life with Jesus, as we walk through life with Jesus, we learn this rest from him in our daily lives as we take up his yoke. And this suggests that we already have a yoke. He's saying, hey, come take my yoke. But we all have a yoke. None of us are unyoked. We are learning from someone or something. All of us are being guided, right? All of us are being formed or malformed. We're all being taught and trained by something. And nowadays, I think it's this, right? This is the great discipler. I mean, our phones are discipling us more than maybe we'd like to believe, right? The things that we scroll, the things that we look at on a computer, the information that we are taking in is shaping our thoughts, which is shaping our hearts, shaping our actions, shaping our reactions. We are all yoked to something. And that's why you feel the need to be beautiful or more beautiful or to look young or to be more successful or to have more or to have newer. It's the vision of greatness or success that becomes our salvation and then becomes our prison. It's what we strive for and can never be enough of. Can never achieve, or at least not achieve for very long. So Jesus says, how's your yoke working for you? How's it working for you? Again, your lifestyle, your habits, your rhythms, your routine, the way that you do life is precisely tuned to produce the life that you are living. Because we're all yoked, and Jesus invites us to trade yokes. Jesus says, take up my yoke. And notice how he describes his yoke in verse 30. He says, for my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. And this is in contrast to the heavy burden that he says the religious people give. A few chapters later in chapter 23, verse 4, he says, hey, the Pharisees, the teachers of the law, they give you this heavy load that they're not even willing to pick up. But he says, hey, come take my yoke, and I'm here with you. I'm shouldering it with you. In the Greek, the word easy actually is like easy to wear or well-fitted. So an ox wouldn't just be given a standard yoke. The yoke would actually be crafted and sanded to fit precisely that ox's shoulders, to where it doesn't rub the shoulders, to where it fits nicely, to where it doesn't wear on him. So it's precisely matched to each yoke, or each yoke to each oxen. So the yoke that Jesus offers me and offers you is personalized. It's customized to you. It's not a one-size-fits-nobody, right? It's specialized to your rhythm, and following Jesus will match your season of life, your temperament, your burdens, and your responsibilities, because we all have different burdens. We all have different responsibilities that we've been called to. So whether you're single or married or divorced or widowed, whether you're starting out in vocation or figuring out how to do life after work, whether you're being parented or in the throes of parenting or caring for aging parents, your yoke will be different. Jesus says, I know you, and I know how you work best. Come and follow me. I have this yoke that I'm walking with you in that's made especially for you. So let's apply this. So if you look at these three verses and you look at the verbs in these three verses, what is it that Jesus is saying? And he says, come to me. Come to Jesus. And there's an initial coming to Jesus. When Jesus says to his followers, come and follow me, that initial time of coming to Jesus, but there is that continual coming back to Jesus time and time again. And there may be some this morning that have never come to Jesus for that first time, never taken up that yoke before, ever before, to learn from him. And this morning is a great time to do that. But for most of us, I'm assuming you're like me, where it's a daily decision of coming back to Jesus, shouldering that yoke, learning from him what it means that produces the rest for my soul that is the way that I'm intended to live. So we come to Jesus, we come back to Jesus, we continually in trust come back to Jesus. But the next verb is to take up. To take up his yoke, but also to take up your yoke fitted for you, to take up his ways, to take up his teachings, to take up his rhythms, to become like him, to go through your days connected to him, not just to check in here and there, but to be yoked to him, to be one with him. You don't just come to him, but we also lay aside our own yoke, right? We take up his yoke. We lay down our yoke. We lay down the things that we turn to shape us and to form us. We lay aside those yokes and we take up his yoke. And then the last verb here is to learn from him. We come to Jesus, we take up his yoke, we put aside our yoke, and then we learn from him. We learn from not from whoever it is that's shaping us, but we learn from Jesus. And this implies practice. It takes time. It takes a lifetime of continuing to practice, continuing to follow in his ways. But he says that the result is rest for our souls. Think back to that reset, recalibration of 2020. You remember when everything first shut down and it was clear that, wow, this isn't just a weekend kind of thing, that we don't know how long this is going to happen. And we started to hear that optimism, right? We started to hear that optimism that this could be a reset for us as a culture, to be reminded of what truly matters. When we're forced to be home, when we're forced not to be out, all the sports were turned off, right? All the things that maybe we use as crutches to just numb our mind and to just kind of get through another day. When all of those things were taken away from us, we couldn't go to the restaurants and we can't, you know, all of that, everything paused. And there is this hope. There is this hope in culture, but I think even in the church, this hope of maybe this will be a time of a deep breath. This will be a time where we remember what is truly important, and it may reset our rhythms once things open back up, whenever things open back up, that it may be good for families. And it may be good for employers and employees to kind of reset to healthier rhythms of life. We were living in Rwanda in 2020, and we returned to the States as COVID hit and lockdown hit. Rwanda shut down. We had to get out quickly, and we actually landed in America with just 6 bags that we packed up from all of our stuff in Rwanda. And when we landed, we had this new house, a house with no furniture, nothing in it, just the stuff that we had in our suitcases. And we landed in a city where we essentially knew no one. And churches were closed, things were closed. So here we are in this pretty much empty house. Our schedule's empty, our life is empty, and we're just kind of here. And that house in that time kind of became for me this metaphor of this new start for us, a new start in a new place, a new season of life. And we had this mantra: we wanted to live simple, we wanted to live slow, and we wanted to live love. And if you think about it, we had the perfect opportunity to do that. Again, to live simple, middle of the pandemic, we don't know anyone, we don't have any stuff. Live slow, live love, just to live in a way that we can show love and receive love from the people around us. I mean, we had everything going for us to be able to do that. But what we found out was, man, this is really hard. It's really hard to live simple and to live slow. And before you knew it, our calendar was really, really full. Our schedule, our weekly schedule, began to fill up more and more. Our house started having things in it that, you know, at first it was, you know, a lot of us, I imagine a lot of you think, man, if we could just get rid of everything in the garage and start over, right? Or get rid of the wardrobe and just start over. Or just get rid of the attic or the storage unit or whatever it is. We have so much stuff. If we could just snap our fingers, it'd be gone, and just kind of only bring into the house intentionally what we want to bring into the house. So that's kind of where we were. But churches and different people realized, oh, these poor missionaries just showed up in the middle of the pandemic with an empty house. I know, let's bring them all of the stuff that we don't want. So we ended up with like 3 different sets of measuring spoons and all kinds of cookie jars and weird decorations that it was kind of like, hey, we left it on your front porch. Hope you can use it. And anyway, so we ended up with a house in a schedule that was fuller than we intended. And some of it was on us, and some of it was just, that's the world that we live in. So all of that to say, this is really, really hard, right? If we couldn't do it with that scenario, then my goodness, we have to learn from Jesus. We have to come back to him. We have to return to him day after day and lay down the yoke that just continually somehow we find on our shoulders that we're learning from other people and other things. Take that yoke off, put the yoke of Jesus on, and learn from him and practice. And my encouragement to us is that we practice together, that we don't try to figure this out on our own, but that these are conversations that you are having as brothers and sisters of what does it mean to follow Jesus in 2023 in this community. What does it look like to live in a way that results in rest for our souls in a way that's very countercultural to everything around us that's moving so quickly? Don't do it alone. Discern together. So the invitation this morning is the invitation of Jesus. It's the invitation to come to him. And if you're one of those that it needs to come to him for that first time to say, I've been walking around with this yoke to the world, yoke to things that are malforming me, that are destroying me. And the result of my habits and my lifestyles is not rest. It's anything but rest. It's turmoil, and it leads to destruction. If today's the day to come to Jesus, then come to Jesus as we stand and as we sing. But for the rest of us, let's come back to Jesus. And let's hear this invitation that our brother shows us and offers to us. So let's stand, and I'm going to read this invitation one more time, and then we'll sing. But go ahead and stand up. So this is from the Message. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me. Get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly.